Choo-choo, motherfucker! Oh, we're live once again. This is episode 5 of the Hype Train podcast with me, your host, Magna Zan. And back again, I've dragged him along once again, is Steve FPV. How you doing, Stefan?
Good evening.
How have you been?
I've been very busy.
Oh, really? So we've been on hiatus for a little while. Been very busy. I've been in and out of the country quite a bit. Let's start with you. What have you been up to?
Basically university. I'm still a student, and then I've just been, I've almost had just a little bit of a break from flying every day, and I've only been flying twice a week or so.
Only twice a week?
Yeah, only twice a week.
Oh, it's just not good enough.
Nah.
How are you going to expect to be on the world platform?
I'm feeling so behind. Don't even have a revolt yet.
Oh, the hype. The hype is real.
Yeah.
Have you been doing anything else, or just uni work? Literally, is that
literally
what you've been
doing? Just uni work. I've been 3D printing a plane.
Oh, 3D printing. Let's talk quickly about that.
Yeah.
Because we've both got the same 3D printer. We've both got Wanhao i3 Pluses, which are awesome FDM printers.
Yep.
What's this plane you're printing?
Basically, there was that flight test episode where I think they did like a vlog, and they had sent... I don't really watch flight test much anymore, but they had sent them a 3D printed plane, and they flew it, and it flew, and that sold me. So I went and bought the plans for the.
Is it what type of, is it just a normal plane, or is it some RC type plane? Is it based on anything?
It's basically an RC type plane.
Get a link.
Basically, it's nearly 1.5 meters wingspan.
So you must have to print it in parts.
Yeah, you print it in parts and then it all kind of fits together. But it's got this cool, like, internal structure and internal routing for the servo and control horns. It's a P-47 Thunderbolt.
Oh, so it is a real plane. Interesting. So for the people that don't know about 3D printing, how long is that going to take you to 3D print?
They say 2 days on the PDF. That's
really?
That's 2 days printing time.
Oh, so that's going to be like a week almost.
Yeah. And then I've slowed it down a little bit, so maybe add a day.
Okay, so what... So you have to print it what? What sort of layer height?
I'm pretty much going with what they recommend, so 0.25mm layer height.
Okay.
And then just 50mm a second on my Wanhao. I had to do a bit of fiddling with the retraction to get it to work right.
Oh, that sounds interesting. And then you just run normal RC gear in it.
Pretty much.
Sweet.
I'm hoping I can stick some RC quadcopter gear in it to make it exciting.
Okay. And you're printing it out of PLA?
Yep, just PLA.
So that's going to melt in the sun. I think it's going to melt. It's going to be interesting to see that fly in sun.
Yeah, I'd love to print it in PETG or something like that, or ABS, but the problem is that the printer has to make really long travel moves, and it's a very challenging print to print.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting. I'll be keen to see that see what it turns out like.
Yeah.
All right. So, what have I been up to? Oh, I've been back to the UK to visit family. So that's why there hasn't been an episode for quite a while. Although I did take the Tiny Whoop with me.
Tiny Whoop for days.
Tiny Whoop. I haven't flown that for a while, but it got me back into it, and I really enjoyed flying it. So what I did, as soon as I got back, is I ordered the B-Core, which I think is the Banggood clone of the B-Drain, which is an F3 replacement flight controller. So I'll be running Betaflight.
Hopefully they send you the right thing. I ordered a fan and they sent me the wrong size fan.
Well, I'm sure it'll be the right flight controller, hopefully.
Cross fingers.
Reports say it's quite good, so
yep.
It'll be interesting to run Betaflight for a while. I'll see if I can get Race Flight on it, because obviously that's way better. Hype!
don't think it matters.
Not for that size, I don't think. So I'm pretty pumped about that. What else have I ordered? So when I came back from the UK, I ordered a whole bunch of stuff. So I ordered that. I'm 3D printing a quad. It's called a Skidmark. So I'm waiting for ABS to arrive.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's basically a 130 size. So from Hawaii, I got those 1306 4000 kV motors specifically for this reason. So I'm going to print that, and apparently it's supposed to be quite good and super tough out of ABS.
1306 motors, wasn't that sort of the size we started out mini quads with?
You might have done. I was on. Maybe. I started on.
No, I think 1306 is a bit smaller. 1806, I know, but I think we started even smaller.
You might be right. I might have some of those actually.
Yeah.
I'll have to look. Then I also ordered. I'd ordered my revolts before I left, and they were held up in customs for ages. So, which was okay because I was in the UK. So I've got those now. What else did I order? Oh, 4-in-1 ESC for the Carbine XL, the Quad Junkie Carbine XL. So it's the stick frame, ultralight thing.
I know you had one other 4-in-1 ESC. How did that go?
It was awesome until I broke it. So the issue I had with it is it didn't blow up or set on fire or anything.
Yeah.
It was the tabs. So basically these 4-in-1 ESCs come with little tabs that stick out of the board.
When I looked at that, I thought the same thing, that they would maybe snap or something.
And they did, The first real good crash I had, it snapped. But interestingly enough, the BB1 chipset version, so the original version of those, were solid boards. So if you go and look at the little B1, for example, that's a solid board. And that's a way better design.
Yeah.
I don't know why they went to these stupid tabs. So I've been raging quite hard about that.
Mm.
But the 30 amp I've ordered are a lot thicker, so I'm going to put some supports in. Yeah, so I'm hoping that's going to last a bit longer, but we'll see. So that's going in the carbine. It's going to be an ultralight build. And what else have I ordered? Some Dominator HD3s.
Okay, so the new one.
The new ones, Gary's got some, and he was like, they're okay. I was like, psh, whatever, I'm ordering them. Mainly four. So I don't know whether anybody's seen this, but everybody knows about the Connex Pro site. There was an update that Bapu posted that just by changing the lens, they've magically made it now work at 720p, 60 frames a second.
By changing the lens?
By changing the lens. It's like, what?
Okay, no, the actual PCB lens with the sensor on it.
Is it that piece or is it the actual lens?
I'm not too sure. I haven't seen this post. But
I said it was a lens. Yeah. It would make sense if it was the chip.
I don't see how sensor. Just changing the lens would really... Or maybe something with the light or... I don't.
Possibly, I don't know. But yeah.
Maybe so they can get away with less processing or something like that.
Mm. Yeah. Well, there's definitely something with it. So they've got that to 60 frames a second. So
like we said, the generational improvement is here.
Mm-hmm. So the reason I bought the HD3s is for stepping into or closer to that system, as well as also DVR. So when the B-Core arrives for the Tiny Whoop, I want to be able to DVR it. Because obviously I'm not going to be able to put a GoPro on there. Yeah. And a lot of the time I fly without a GoPro because I'm obviously racing.
Yeah.
And a GoPro is not going to really help me. Yeah. So I want to get some DVR footage.
The DVR on the new HDs, your new HDs, will be a lot better than the one on my just version 2 standard def ones.
Yeah, I've seen some videos and it does look better. It looks smoother.
Yeah.
The colors don't look right, but you can post-process those.
It's not important. The issue I always had was that when you unplug the battery, it would always lose file, and it was just a pain to start recording.
Yeah, these have got that capacitor thing, so they'll save, which is good. And I'll probably get some of those Panasonic batteries as well. Just for the longer runtime, because they seem to be legit. So, yeah, that's me. I've just been ordering up a storm. Also, what else I've ordered? I know, we'll talk about that, actually. we'll talk about in a minute. So let's talk about the first thing. Let's talk about the Revolt and Race Flight. Yep. So full disclosure, I am officially on Team Race Flight, which means I get Race Flight stuff, and I get early access to Race Flight 1.
Yep.
So there's a little bit of bias here, but I'll try and stay as objective as I can.
Well, I'm not on Team Race Flight. I haven't bought the Revolt. I'm still running my original Revolution boards.
Get out.
Yeah, I know. I'll try to stay unbiased.
So, a bit of backstory. Maybe 5 months ago now, there was a bunch of boards that came out at the same time as the Revo when Race Flight was getting reasonably big.
Yeah.
And a couple of them tried to do 32 kilohertz.
Yep.
I had a couple of these boards. They kind of worked, but there were issues with 5-volt regulator noise and also basically just the layout and the way it was running. So it kind of ran, and I had my first taste of 32 kilohertz, and it was freaking awesome. It was really hard to tune back then, because of the oscillations and the noise and whatnot and the gyros that they're running. But 32 kilohertz at that point was like, oh, this is awesome. And then I had to go back to 8 kilohertz. So for the longest time, we've been running 8 kilohertz. Then the Revolt came out, which was designed for 32 kilohertz. I'm not sure about the whole gyro in the middle thing. Doesn't appear to make any difference for me, to be honest.
You're still running dampers on it now, even though...
Yes. Yeah, so I think the dampers... So way back when, the original 32 kilohertz boards, the dampers helped because of the noise level of the gyro.
And just the voltage regulator wasn't that good.
Yeah, and there was no... Yeah, so the Lux flight controller, the first bunch that used the... 6,500 gyro.
Same issue.
And the Nays Rev 6, where they had the noisy gyros. That wasn't actually the gyro's fault. That was a bad reg. So the 5 volt was bleeding noise into the gyro, and that's what caused the majority of those issues. However, soft mounting helped, but didn't take it completely away. With the Revolt, it uses a completely different gyro. Soft mounting does dampen it. Does dampen noise that gets through, and it's mainly because it's running so fast. So it's running at a true 32 kilohertz and multi-shot 32 kilohertz, all this jazz. Like if you hard mount it, run it on H8, runs absolutely fine.
Yeah, there's funny stuff that seems to happen with the filtering when you change the speed it runs at.
Yeah, and just so with a standard Revo at 8 kilohertz, performs awesome. So we're not talking about multi-shot on 32 kilohertz. We're just talking about the gyro update.
8 rate. Kilohertz did feel like a bit of a sweet spot in terms of the way it flew, the way it did oscillations, the way it felt on the sticks.
And the tuning window was so huge.
It was massive.
Yeah, I mean, you could really go to town with those pins.
It was difficult to tune because you did stuff and it just didn't do anything. It all flew amazing.
Yeah. So I mean that was all good, but the Revolt, running the latest BB edition. So this is not Race Flight 1. So I've tried Race Flight 1. Mm-hmm. I'm running BB 400 at the moment, which I think is the latest, and that does 32 kilohertz gyro update and multi-shot.
Yeah, it still has issues though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So
use with warning.
Yeah. So it's still beta. There are some bugs. Not specifically with the Revolt, but with the beta builds, there's still a dead duck issue, which we had today, so it will just fall out of the sky. That isn't in 375, so if you want to run 375, you can do. But always check on the Race Flight Slack channel for the latest bugs.
It changes hourly.
Yeah. There was 5 builds over the past 2 days.
Yeah.
So
they're definitely doing something there, and... It's not all good,
absolutely.
But it's progress.
Yep, definitely. And the main thing is that they've worked on the filtering. So the filtering is spot on, so you don't need to mess around with the filtering. And this is particularly the LPF ranges. So there's a gyro LPF and there's a D-term LPF. Don't mess with those if you update to BB400. Just leave them as they are. The only things you want to be messing with is pretty much the D-term on your PIDs. You can pretty much leave P where it is if you're running multi-shot ESCs and BL Heli S. Yeah. The other thing you might want to do is have a play around with, there's a new filtering number in there, and I think it's defaulted to 280 or 240 by default. You can go up and down on that by 10 at a time just to see if it gets better.
Yeah.
And what that's doing is that's the overall filtering for the board and for the PIDs and whatnot. So the lower you go, the less filtering it does and the more responsive the whole copter becomes.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll actually feel it. It's like it's like latency almost, but not. And with the Revolt, the thing that I've noticed is that you can go really low on that filtering, so you get ridiculous response. And that's the main point of it, is that it's just ultra smooth, ultra responsive on the sticks. It does what you tell it to do, and the tuning range is massive.
It's definitely doing something different, that board, because you put it on and your quad started whistling, and it's still whistling today when I flew it just to sort of check it out. Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't know whether that's the props though.
Yeah, I don't know what it is either. It could just be. It could also just be a BB thing.
Well, when the motors don't get hot either, which is...
It's really weird.
So they make, my machine makes this whistling noise. So I'm using the Racecraft 5051 props, and my quad whistles. It's almost like there's too much D-term.
Yeah, and the D-term has been something quite difficult to get right on race flight, I've found. I never did anything with D-term before, really, or when I changed it, I noticed differences. But on now in race flight, when I'm changing it, I don't feel much different in the sticks, but apparently it makes a big difference, and it makes a big difference to how noisy everything is.
Yeah. The D-term in race flight is really what P-term is in everything else.
Yeah.
Like when you put race flight on, pretty much you don't have to worry about P at all. You just leave the defaults for the most part.
Yeah.
And then you adjust... your KI for how stiff you want the copter to be. So if you want it to be super stiff and rigid, almost robotic, bump that up to like 1.5 on pitch and roll, and then 1.7 on yaw. If you want it to be a little bit more smooth and kind of floaty-ish, kind of not drifty, but you're not fighting it as much. Kind of smooth, and then lower it down to like 1.2, maybe 1.1, and see how you go. But the main thing is with D term, so that's where you do the majority of your tuning now. So if you go up, so if you're getting prop wash in really hard stops and descending, just bump it up by like 10 or 20 points each time until it mostly goes away, or until you start getting hot motors.
Good advice.
And you can also run higher D-term on yaw as well now.
Yeah, because you had those on the machine I flew with the Revolt, and it had those new fancy props. And I've noticed with those new fancy props that I've been getting quite a lot of prop wash, but your one had no prop wash again.
Yeah, well, that's because I've bumped up the KD a little bit from the stock. Yeah. I think stock's quite – it's on the low side, so people don't set fire to things.
Yeah.
But you so that scaling window, just to give people an idea, if you load up the defaults of race flight, you can go up probably another 100 points, 150 points on D term. That's the kind of tuning window you're looking at. So just go up like 10 or 20 at a time, and just watch on roll, because roll seems to be the most sensitive to D term. Keep that sort of 40 or 50 points less than pitch. And typically you should be in a good range. But yeah, just keep bumping it up until prop wash goes away, or until you notice warm or hot motors. They won't cook, but they'll get warmer.
It's like you just spoke a different language there, Ian.
Really?
You just blew my mind with what you said.
What was it?
I don't know. I'm just thinking about tuning quads has changed so much in the last 6 months.
Massively. Yeah. Like, I mean, it used to be the case where you didn't used to teach DTERM at all. It used to be a case of, oh, don't touch it, don't touch it. It's, but now it's, it, particularly with race flight anyway, I don't know what it's like with beta flight. I think you just pretty much load that and fly, don't you?
Yeah, it's beta flight hasn't changed that much into the way it tunes and actually the way it flies.
So yeah, that's some tips for people that are running race flight. Also be very aware of flashing and modifying ESCs. I know there's some people that are running newer ESCs that have had issues with bricking them, or at least one of them. That was with the TBS 25 amp. I haven't had any issues with any of the Cicadas or Acorns or any of the standard kind of BL Heli-S.
Of course, if you're new to it, you'll do something.
Oh yeah, totally.
Beginner's luck. But if you've been around it for a while, you'll probably know.
there should be plenty of people around New Zealand now that have got these boards and are running race flight.
Yeah.
I would expect if you don't have anyone in the area and you've got some questions, just send me a message. I'm happy to help. Jump on
Slack.
Yeah, so there's an awesome, well, if you go onto Facebook, there's a group, and then you can jump on Slack as well. Slack's like instant chat with the developers and tons of people
that test it. There's just heaps of people that browse it the whole time and go, oh, yeah, I know how to fix that.
Yeah, loads.
The banter's good too, so.
Oh, yeah, loads of trolling opportunities.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's race flight, that's the Revolt. Would I recommend it to everybody? Not just yet. I would probably, if you're keen to get the absolute best race performance out of your machine, then yes.
If you know what you're doing. Yeah, if you have the time to muck around with it, I think you can do great things with it.
Yeah. But if you want to experiment with race flight, I would say get a Revo.
If you want to keep the hobby exciting, if you want to try, like, yeah.
And just so people know that there is a build coming for beta flight for the Revolt as well, so you will be able to flash between race flight and beta flight. So don't think that you buy this board and then you won't be able to use it with anything else. You will be able to use it with both.
Yeah.
Just one other thing as well, just to hype it up a little bit more. Sorry to sound like a sales pitch, but the board layout is different. So the motor layout is now X1234, not X4, 2, 3, whatever it is with the normal ones. So when you put the board in, you solder it up directly to the corners, and that by default the motor layout will be different. So just be aware of that.
That's not the first time that's changed.
No, from base flight to clean flight. If anybody remembers that far back.
Yeah, no, and clean flight actually changed it at some point as well.
Oh, really? Changed it twice.
I think he did.
Hype.
That was brutal. I broke a few props, I think.
I'm sure. I remember seeing on the forums a lot of people chopping fingers and flipping cords.
Yeah. Just double check everything.
Yep. So that's the hype about that. So I wanted to talk also about some racing stuff, because obviously I'm a big fan of racing, and typically that's what I do a lot of.
It's all you do, yeah.
Pretty much. But I thought we'd just talk about some, not so much hype stuff, but just some tips that I've found with racing recently, and what I've been working on to improve, I guess. And this has all come out of Hawaii, really. So the first thing that I've been doing is practicing specific things when I go. And practice. I don't just go out and just blast around the field at full throttle and burn up a whole bunch of packs. I go out with purpose. So I might go out and I might work on a slalom section, or I might work on a split S section or a power loop section, or going fast full throttle into a really slow corner, and trying to keep everything smooth and tight. So gone are the days where I don't know whether how many people have seen my videos on YouTube, but there's a video that I put up, I think it's the most recent one, of the Music Point test track that I run, that most people should be familiar with. But there's a corner on that, or a lot of corners on that, that I go full throttle into, back off the throttle, and then go full throttle again. And it's very, very slow. Like we were out there today.
It feels quick.
It feels quick at the time because it makes a ton of noise and you're coming on and off the throttle all the time. But it's really slow. Like when we were out there today and we were flying with Gareth Russell, obviously yourself, and I don't know whether you were, but I was just cruising around at kind of half throttle-ish.
Yeah, you were seeing how fast you can get it just with not going crazy on the throttle.
Yeah, and Gareth was doing his usual full throttle everywhere, and I was as quick or just as quick, just cruising around, and it was a lot less effort to go that fast, and I wasn't crashing as much.
It's something like that is so interesting to watch from the third person, because the other guy, you can see he's stressed on the sticks, and he's going full throttle, and it's messy, and it's sketchy, and especially with those again, the secret props, or not secret,
secret props. But, yeah, we'll get to the props.
We've got a hard coming up again,
The reason I started doing that is purely for watching Sean Taylor at Hawaii.
Yeah.
The way he flew was like I've never seen anybody fly before. Like he would go full stick on a straight.
Yeah.
And then every single corner or technical section would slow down to a crawl. Yeah, it was literally a crawl. It's like, why are you going so slow? But he would be half a lap ahead of everyone.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Every single time. It was incredible to watch. And he was so controlled. And if you watch his DVR footage from Hawaii, it just looks super smooth, super precise. Every lap is the same. And to watch it from third person was like, so that's how you go on a track. And what he's doing is using the racing lines. So the second gate after the start, so there's a red gate at the start, and then there's a massive straight, and there's a white gate at the top. Now, what I was doing and what a lot of other people were doing were hitting that white gate and doing that whole snap your 180 and then mashing the throttle again, whereas he was keeping the power on and taking a really wide line out of it, and he was just pulling away every single time and would slow down in the middle section and then just mash the throttle
keeping
and do the same.
Smooth. Keeping the flight controller happy.
Yep, totally. Like there was no crazy corrections, there was no crazy mashing the throttle to keep it back online. It was super controlled, super smooth. So I've been really trying to do that, and just and it seems to, at the moment I'm probably slower than I would have been normally, but I'm starting to find the racing lines, and I'm seeing the racing lines out of particular gate styles, where I can keep the power on and maybe take a slightly wider line, and then be better lined up for the next gate. And it's more about kind of going slow in and fast out. So very much
it's something I've known for a while, and I think you've known for a while, is that taking it slower is actually a lot better for both, if you want to seriously do well at an event, just because you'll be more consistent.
Yes.
And just actually it teaches yourself just to be relaxed when you're flying.
Yeah. I mean, that's the
and
biggest thing.
And not be nervous, I found.
Yeah. I mean, you can see it. As soon as somebody dials back the throttle, the quad's a lot happier for a start.
I mean,
if you're sitting with your quad at full throttle all the time, or for 90% of the track, your quad is not going to be happy. There's very little headroom in the upper end of the throttle to keep the corrections in.
Yeah.
So if you can be as quick or keep it sort of 75 to 50% throttle, your quad's going to be a lot happier. You're going to be a lot more responsive on the sticks. It's going to be a lot easier to control, and your mistakes are going to be a lot less.
Yeah, and you'll break less stuff. Go slower, have more fun.
Well, I mean, it's not even really about going slower. It's about being smoother and shortening the track as well.
Yeah,
like when you blast through at full throttle through a gate and do that whole snap yaw. So what I'm talking about here is when you go through a gate and you do a yaw and a roll.
To change directions.
Yeah, and you
degrees.
Do a 180, and you get that prop wash, and then you mash the throttle again. That's what I'm talking about. That is just ridiculously slow. And if you watch people do it in line of sight, it's like, what are you doing?
Why are you going so far past it?
Yeah, miles past it, stopping, and then going forwards again. Your battery pack's sagging, your whole quad's going, stop,
it's unsettled because it's just had to turn around from full throttle to no throttle to full throttle.
Yeah, it's just not good. If you can arc that corner out and maybe take a wider line and then come back in, way quicker. And your packs are going to be a lot happier. So yeah, I mean that's what I've been trying to work on. Seems to be working pretty well at the moment. So based off that, let's talk about the props, motor, and maybe some batteries as well.
Okay.
So I, again, from this is all coming from Hawaii. The thing they were all running over there, I was running 2300 kV. It was just not fast enough. I was running the Dell 5045 tri-blades. And even with those, ran a normal track, it would be fast enough, but that...
Hawaii wasn't a normal track at all.
No, it wasn't. But even on a normal track, now that I've switched to 2600 kV, it's so much more comfortable to be around that mid-throttle area.
Yeah.
And I've just got the headroom, and if I need to blast past, then I can peg it in a straight line, and it'll go. So in combination with the 2600s, I'm also running the Racecraft 5051s. So, 5051s.
What do I think?
Because I let you try them, didn't I? So yeah, I gave you a
sense to
try
these. These are amazing. I didn't put the money down, and I'm really picky with my props. I'm one of the few guys that are running two-blade props, and I have been for a long, long time, just because I like the feel of them. These Racecraft props had a good feel to them. I felt like the throttle stick had more movement at the bottom end of the throttle, so I could better control altitude when I was leveling out and stuff like that. Essentially I feel like it widened my throttle range, not just at the top but at the bottom as well.
And that's the issue that I find with normal blades. So just to recap, I used to run APC props as well, and they used to be, I really liked them, but they used to absolutely sag my pack stance in chronic, because they just would not stop gripping. But the other problem with them, they were a lot wider cord. So these Racecraft props, so the 5051, we should also point out first, is not 51 pitch, it's equivalent pitch.
I think we should also point out that these Racecraft props and these APC props, the shape is similar to traditional aeroplane props.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So the reason for the massive, the warning, we're going to get into bro science, probably have Chris Jackson joining us, raging at us a minute.
We'll get the internet warriors.
Yeah. So the reason it's a massive pitch towards the hub is because it's spinning a lot slower there. So it needs more pitch. So the idea is that it's the same pitch across the whole blade, if that makes sense to people. So if you think about the speed at which the tip is moving to the speed at which the hub is moving, it's a lot slower at the hub, so it needs more pitch.
So it's essentially pushing the same amount of air at the tip
and
at the center of the cord.
Yes, correct. Now, these props are also a lot lighter than the APC, and they're also a lot thinner cord as well. So the cord is the width of the prop. So the APC are pretty wide all the way down. They're almost the same width as a normal prop from memory. I'd have to get one out and have a look. But these ones are very wide at the hub, which is where you want it to be wide, because it's obviously it needs to push a lot of air there. And at the end, towards the tip, where it's spinning a lot faster, you don't want it as wide because it doesn't need to be. And I think that's where these props don't stress the packs as much, and that's what I'm noticing. Like if you sit at full throttle, it's gonna spank your packs.
Yeah.
But any prop is gonna do that. Where these are so good is that it's the mid range and the bottom, like you say, like that low RPM control. But if you come out of a split S or you do a maneuver where you're falling through your own prop wash, it just sits there and you've got a lot more control on the sticks. And I think
people have said, these props are faster at the top end, but they might be a little bit faster at the top end, but they're a lot faster at the middle, and it just feels a bit more effortless to go fast, and you still have more control because you're using less throttle the whole time because the prop is quicker. Mm-hmm. It comes back again to that flying at 80% thing and taking the best racing line, and it really helps with that, I think.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's a website that did an excellent write up of these props. I'll link it in here, but it's propwash.com or propwashed.com.
Yes.
And they did some interesting tests. So they did full speed runs. They compared the amps and they compared the overall speeds. Over the Dow 5045s, the Tri-Blades, which were my previous favorite, these are a full, 20 Ks quicker?
Yeah, and the average current is higher, but
yes,
they're going faster. The average speed is faster.
Yeah, it's
10
20%
miles an hour faster.
More. Yeah, it's 20% more speed for effectively $2. You know, because a pack of props is, $4 versus $6, thereabouts. So you show me a performance mod that gives 20% extra speed to a machine for $2.
Yeah. They should sponsor me because we've given them such a good review.
Yeah.
And also they're durable.
Yes, they are. Apart from the tips. The tips are not durable.
Yeah, but no one cares about the tip.
No.
About the
shaft.
Well,
you do if you keep breaking it. No. Oh, the shaft. Giggity, giggity. Oh, man. Yeah, so that, I mean, they're not as durable as normal durables. They don't break, but they don't bend. They do bend, but the tips tend to go before anything else. So you'll get a few crashes out of them, and then you probably have to replace them.
Yeah,
not a major. I'd prefer to do that and have a properly flying quad than half bent.
They're not as bad as the HQ props.
Oh no, nowhere near.
They don't shatter when you look at them.
No, the old HQs here. No, they don't do that. The other thing I noticed with them as well is that when we were racing today, again, I'm going to go back to Gareth's machine because he was sitting on pretty much full throttle for the whole track. Now, he was running 2,500 kV motors, various different sizes, I think 225s and 2008s or something, the Zoe ones.
Different width, different height.
Mm. And he was sitting at full throttle most of the time, and he was running the 5046 durables, the HQs. And his pack was not lasting as long as my pack, and I was running pretty much the same packs. I think we were running 1500s or 1300s, depended. And we were doing 5 or 6 laps, and I was quicker around the track. I had more volts left in my pack at the end, and it was just a lot easier to run. So I think the fact that I was able to get away with only 75%, occasionally the odd full throttle around the track, meant that I wasn't spanking the packs as much. I think if you're sitting on full throttle, it's going to, like we said, it's going to drain a lot of juice quickly.
For me, flying just feels a little bit more organic with these props. Everything just seems to flow a little bit more. It feels a bit more back when I used to fly FPV planes. You keep momentum more, and it's more chuckable almost. And almost with these props as well, if I do a move and I cut the throttle, the quad almost turns into a rock with no sort of aerodynamic influence on where it's going, which I really like.
I think it's the speed at which they spin up and spool down. So, I think we've talked about this before previously, where if you've got a reasonably heavy prop, like the Dow props, they're actually a reasonably heavy prop. Yeah. It takes a bit of effort to spin that up and then spool it down again, even with active braking on.
I think it's the fact that a really big angle prop actually needs quite a lot of speed to work, where if it slows right down, because it essentially puts out less thrust at a lower RPM compared to these flatter, less pitch props.
Mm. Yeah, it's certainly interesting. I mean, I was interested in putting them back to back because I've been flying these RKs for quite a while now.
Yeah,
and I put a set of Dals back on my machine, and they flew good, but the first thing I noticed was coming on and off the throttle. Like going into a corner, I would come off the throttle and it would coast towards the corner.
Yeah, where these don't.
No, they
sort of have to stay on the throttle around the corner to actually get around the corner.
Yeah. They fly. They feel the throttle response feels very similar to the old HQ 5040s, the way they would come on and off the throttle all the time. And you get a lot more control that way. But when you get on that throttle, it's
and good. The last thing, we've talked so much about these props now, but they're really stiff, so they don't deflect.
Yes.
With a lot of props I was flying, I was finding you run these really, really high, powerful motors, you get up to the top of the throttle and they start deflecting. And the worst is when they start deflecting different amounts, I find sometimes. And then the quad wants to like pull back or something like that. You go full throttle and then it pitches up or it pitches to the left and it's never the same. These at full throttle, they still seem pretty much the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the easiest thing to know whether your props are deflecting or not is one thing is you can twist them with your fingers and see how stiff they actually are. And you imagine if those things are pushing, let's say 800 grams, and you're only twisting it, you're nowhere putting 800 grams of thrust on each one.
Yeah.
So they're going to twist in flight. And the other thing, the easiest way to know is that if it gets ridiculously loud when you're at full throttle, that means they're deflecting.
But
and they're just making noise than power. Oh, yeah, it sounds cool as.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't go anywhere.
No.
Like if you watch somebody that flies the 5040s, the Dow 5040s, either the quad
original.
Blades or the original ones or the super thin ones.
Yeah.
You can just hear them go.
They hit that upper speed limit and that's it.
Yeah. Whereas these with the 2600s just keep going. And based on that prop washed feedback, for only what, 10 amps more in flight, so they were peaking at 58 amps or so.
Yeah.
Which isn't too bad in flight at full throttle.
Your power system should be able to take it.
Oh,
I've been
easy.
Fine. I haven't even thought about
that. That's not per motor, total. That's total.
Yeah.
So if your machine can't handle 58 amps total, then I'd be worried.
Yeah.
Because in corners and stuff, if you're mashing the throttle, you'll be peaking at well over 100 probably.
When I did have an OSD, I was getting like 140 amps on my...
Yeah, yeah. And on speaking of OSDs, actually, I should probably point out that I think I mentioned last episode about ESCs and the fact that I'm going towards 4-in-1s. Obviously, this one I've mentioned it as well. But one of the problems with 4-in-1s is that, one, they have no 5-volt power. So I've been running 5-volt from the VTX. Into the flight controller.
I don't like that.
Why?
I've done it too, but it's just sketchy.
Why?
It just is.
Your reasoning, Steve FPV.
It's just not right.
Why?
It's technically not the right thing to do.
It's 5-volt.
No, it is. It's absolutely right. But I would rather use an ESC. Oh, mate. Yeah. There can be more noise in it. Basically, I think.
How can there be more noise? It's typically a filtered output for a start.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's no reason not to use the 5-volt on a VTX. And I had the same conversation with somebody in the race flight chat. They were like, oh, no, that's real sketchy. What if your VTX blows up? I'm like, well, if your VTX blows up, you're not going to be able to see anyway. So
yeah, it doesn't really matter. It's probably better.
And he was like, oh yeah, I suppose so. I think it's just one of those things where it sounds sketchy, but it's actually, that's actually legit. And it is legit. I've been running that for a while now.
Just make sure that everything's connected properly.
Yes. Yes. And it just means that you have to run the camera off the raw battery.
Yeah.
Which can introduce noise if you don't do it right. So you will get lines. But typically it's fine as long as you keep your wires short, twisted, all that kind of stuff.
I don't know. The whole stuff needs to change there. The whole sort of setup with voltage regulation hasn't been good with Quadsit for a while. Especially with these high power PDBs with voltage regulators in there, and then not the cleanest output.
No, oh, they're so noisy.
Yeah.
Like, the Matex are just terrible.
They are.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully some of them have got LC filtering on them.
And the thing that a lot of people don't realize is switching regulators actually can do very little for reducing noise in your signal. Yeah.
Stink.
It's definitely a part of quad flying that can improve. It shouldn't be an issue, but it is.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it you can tidy up with wiring and filters, but I mean, if you keep it reasonably basic, it's normally okay. Yeah. But one of the things I was going to say was, because I have no OSD and no idea of voltage, I've switched to the Arrow V2s.
So that's the camera with the OSD built in and just shows voltage. For me, that makes so much sense.
It's good.
Every single OSD I've had that's built into the PDP, I've blown up.
Yeah, I've had issues with them as well. Either the shunt goes for the current sensor, else goes, and it's like, oh.
And really, do you need amps for your mini quad? No.
Not really.
No.
I only need to know voltage. Yep. I don't need to know milliamps. All I need to know is my voltage, and if my packs are sagging to 13 volts in flight, it's time to come in.
Yeah, or 10 volts in flight. It doesn't matter, just as long as it's there.
Yeah, as long as you know, and it's time to come in. But yeah, the Arrow is super, super large display.
Yeah.
It's
so pretty much the same. Does that have the same issue? Because the one I saw, I think it was the RunCam, or I don't know.
No, it was the Arrow. You are thinking of
the Arrow. It had that problem where it only updated every 60 seconds or 30 seconds.
Nah, they fixed it. V2 is the way to go. Yeah, it's legit.
Good.
So that's what I'm running on one of my machines now, and it is awesome. So I'm super happy with that. The other thing that I've done as well, and this was thanks to, and I've seen this for a while, but it was thanks to you and James, really. The GoPro lens. So running the GoPro Hero 2/3 lens. I know people have been doing this for a while.
For ages.
And I was like, I'll just get a 2.3.
I've done it as well and then gone back to other lenses.
And what did you think?
Well, the problem was that I had the GoPro lens, but I didn't have the right GoPro lens.
Aha. Uh-huh. So I'll put a link in the show notes, because I know people have been requesting, you talk about all this stuff and you never tell us where to find it.
Do people listen to the podcast? I don't even know.
There's like three people, I think.
Oh, sweet.
So shout out to those three people. I know Hadley does, because they listen to it at work, and Scott Spooner.
Yeah, and
Greg as well.
Yeah.
So I know them, and I think there's a few others. Sorry, I'm not going to name everybody. But yeah, the GoPro lens. So why is the GoPro lens good? So there's a couple of reasons.
Why is it good? Because it has the filtering for the light.
Yes.
It's got the coatings on the glass.
Yes.
It's sharp all the way across.
So just define that. So just to clear that up.
Basically, all the elements in the glass are better. They're manufactured to tidal tolerances. It costs more. It's just a better lens.
Yeah. So the main thing you'll notice is that it says it's 170 degree, but it's more like a 2.3 millimeter lens in terms of the amount that you can see. There's little to no fisheye, which is kind of bizarre, but you can see so much more. And the biggest thing that I noticed, even because I've been running 2.3 lenses, so going from my normal 2.3 to the GoPro lens, when you move quickly from side to side, and you have like trees and stuff, you don't get any weird artifacting or blurring on the sides.
Distortion.
You don't get any of that. It's just clear.
It's just more true to life.
Yes, and I find that it's awesome for when you're zipping around trees and stuff, because you don't get this blurry effect. Highly recommend the GoPro lens. It fits on any HS-117 or 1190.
I've tried lenses every month for the last like forever. I just always just been ordering lenses, and come back to the GoPro now, and I've actually gone, this is my favorite.
I mean, I've got a stack of them in my drawer. 2.1s, 2.3s, 2.5s.
Yeah, I've got everything, man. And the problem with lenses as well is that, there have been different manufacturers, and none of them are ever the same.
Yeah, I ordered five from this one, and they all seem to be the same. I think it was the same place you
got. At the moment, this one seems to be reliable.
Yeah, and they're a good price as well. I know somebody had mentioned that Final Glide had said that there's a difference between the $16 one and the $5 one.
Yeah.
Might be the case, but $5 one's working for me.
And this was the Hero 2 lens, not the Hero 3, not the Hero 4.
Correct. Well, it says it's a Hero 2/3.
Yeah. Because according to GoPro, I think the lens between the Hero 2 and the Hero 3 is different.
Okay. Maybe that's what it is.
Because every generational improvement of GoPro, they've been like, oh, less distortion, sharper lens, twice as sharp, twice as fast. It could just be marketing wank. But
yeah. Well, I mean, they charge an arm and a leg. I would expect it to be better each time. Yeah. So that's pretty much what I've been up to. Oh, and also I've been trying to push for the local guys to run the 25 milliwatt so we can run more races.
Or just decent quality VDXs.
Yeah.
Just get it all the same. Yeah. Make it not an issue.
So if people don't know, next season, next road across season, there will be enforced VTXs and antennas. So if you're not running them and you turn up, you probably won't be able to fly. Yeah. I mean, the price of the Unify now is, why would you go anywhere else? Yes, it's kind of annoying with the lights to change the channels and stuff, but that's a minor.
$25. I can get a VTX for cheaper. RC timer.
Oh, of course you can. And this is one of the arguments I keep having with people. It's like, oh, my VTX is fine, my video is good. It's like, well, that's great, but when you have eight people flying,
it needs a lot more things matter all of a sudden.
Yeah. It's like, we've talked like about saying, this on the I can shout in a building all by myself and I can hear myself no problem.
Yeah.
It's like, that's great. Now I had eight people shouting in the same building.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It doesn't quite work. And that's, yeah, so that's, been working on that, so I've been switching over all my machines to. I've got most of my machines on Unifies anyway. Been kind of standardizing setups, trying to just practice.
I think we should. If you buy the TBS Unify, expect it to be the last time you have to update before you go HD. If you ever go HD.
Yes.
It's as good as it's going to get.
Pretty much. I mean, there's videos online that you can use to compare. There's one of the guys, HPI guy, I think it is, did a really cool video. This was before I went to Hawaii, comparing the Pro HV, which is the same as the normal race one, pretty much, on 200 milliwatt versus the normal, I think it was an FX-based one. And he was doing the same flight, and the amount of glitches the FX one had compared to the Unify was astounding.
A noticeable difference.
Yes, noticeable.
Yeah.
I mean, the other side of it is, though, is that it's all good and well that you've got a good VTX and a good antenna on that side, but you also need a decent receiver as well, and that's where the crosshairs come in. So just bear that in mind.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty much done, I think, for this episode. I don't want to go into too much stuff. We'll save some others for another episode. Is there anything else you want to? Any final words?
No, nothing really. Shout out to everyone that flies and has been flying quads forever. And just keep up with the hobby.
Cool. So we'll be back for another episode whenever we're back.
Awesome.
Thanks again. Catch you later, guys.
Awesome.